Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Chinirao Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora and welcome everyone to Neat and Footy, the best place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. We have a huge week ahead. In both Rugby League and Rugby Union, we have State of Origin, we have Super Rugby Finals, and alongside me today, I have my Coley to join me in this chat, Sammy Wykes.
Talk to me.
Talk to me, Sammy.
How good is this week? Honestly, Super Rugby Grand Final was this week. We're going to cover some of the Rugby Union that happened on the weekend, semi-final football. Oh,
all the Kiwi teams, eh?
Mate, they were outstanding. It's very
good
hard. It's very hard to go past them. They've just been some of the best footy I've ever seen. So we've got some of that chat. As you mentioned, Origin, I challenge you on Friday to come up with your game plan. Give me a bit of strategy.
Got the coach's hat on today.
Coach's hat. Yeah. I love it because I love your insight. So we got that. Obviously, there is some NRL stuff.
Yeah, we had round 15 kickoff over the weekend.
We've got Shelley Long. She's back on today and she's going to cover some of the Super W that happened with the Drawers Come From Behind victory. That was outstanding work in Fiji. But this is the big one, our guest, T. How good's this?
He's a big hitter.
He's a big hitter.
And I know.
Would it be legal in this day and age, that hit?
No, he'd probably be the most suspended player on earth. But we do have a PNG legend and former PNG Kumu. His name is James Seguiaro, joining us here on Knees and Footy. Now, this interview was recorded a few weeks ago, but since
that's
then,
why I'm pumped for it, because we've been trying to release it, but just with the holidays.
Public holiday, we had Moana Pacifica interviews. But over the weekend, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, and he's like, "Bro, James Seguiaro keeps messaging me and saying, why aren't they putting my interview on Knees and Footy?
We're saving it. It's coming up. Honestly, you don't want to miss this chat. It is unbelievable.
Give a teaser. What's one little story that caught your eye?
Probably. Hang around for this. The reason why they had to move from PNG to North Queensland. Let's get into the show.
Hey everyone, it's Dudley Dotto here from the Townsville Blackhawks, and you're listening to News and Footy.
Sammy, what are we starting with, NRL or State of Origin?
I think let's start with NRL round 15 and then come home with a wet sail on why New South Wales will win game two.
Well, round 15, they did kick off last Thursday and we covered the Rabbitohs defeating the Broncos 48-6 on Friday's show on Knees and Footy. The great man, Alex Johnston, increases his score tally to 229 tries in total, scoring four tries on Thursday evening. There were four other games over the weekend. There were a number of teams that got the rest because we do have State of Origin this week. Now, the Dolphins, the mighty Dolphins.
The Dolphins, are they the real deal?
They have made it six in a row, beating the Roosters 48-10, and your cousin, Isaiah Katoa, he was outstanding again. Another try, a try assist, but do you reckon the Dolphins can go the whole way?
That's why I asked you, are they the real deal? There was, I think that first period of that season where they just weren't finding any wins, you're going, oh my goodness, this is going to be a tough year for the Dolphins. But man, they have turned things around. And I think I heard Cameron Smith talk about the biggest change was after their loss to Manly, I believe it was, and they just said our defensive efforts need to improve. Mm. So they made a collective effort. We know we can attack, but our defensive efforts need to improve, and they've shown up, and it's just allowed their players to play with confidence. And as I said, Isaiah, I know he's my cousin, and I'm probably biased anyway towards family, but he is really, really controlling the game, and I feel like his halves partner is doing a sensational job. Like they're just really clicking and making things work together.
Yeah, look, when you look at their team, I love their spine. in Isaiah Katoa, Cody Nikorima, Jeremy Marshall-King, Max Plath. But then they've got those strike weapons out wide. And, you know, Herbie Farnworth is probably one of the best players in rugby league in the world right now. So it won't surprise me seeing them creep into top four and then making it a real competitive final series. You've got to compare them against Penrith Panthers, the Warriors.
Yep.
And I would say Manly Seagulls up there as well. And the Newcastle Knights are looking dangerous. But, man, I don't see why they aren't successful come the back end of the year.
What do you think is their biggest strength that they've got? Like, why they're getting their results?
They have a very aggressive forward pack. Their forward pack can go forward, and they are relentless in the way that they play their game, the forwards. But then their spine capitalized on the back of it.
Yeah, okay.
They're all in tune. You can see that they must do hours and hours of training and understanding, you know, the timing, their set plays. And then on the back of that, they've got the strike weapons on the outside. Jermaine Isako as well to execute off the back of that ball movement.
It makes sense why you say that. Like, they're getting quick play the balls, so maybe the line speed from the defence isn't coming up as much, because I feel like Isaiah and Nikorima, they have a lot of time. It looks like they're playing with a lot of time. So I don't know if they're getting their tempo, their depth and alignment right, but it just seems they have a lot of time to be able to choose the right option.
We've mentioned it before as well, and I still believe that Isaiah Katoa, a lot of his timing comes off his rugby union background. Yeah, the way that he has to hold his feet because he doesn't have that time in union, or didn't have that time in union where the defenders were, you know, 10, 15 meters away from him.
Yeah.
They're up in his face. And then you see the way that he plays, he can control the tempo, and then everyone just running genuine lines. Defensive lines have to collapse, and then he just pulls the trigger.
What about his dummy show and go?
I like the show. Mate,
I followed the ball as well, thinking it was gone, and he just goes straight over. But you mentioned Jermaine Isako. I think probably the underrated or undervalued part of his game is his goal kicking.
Yeah,
I think that's crucial come finals 40. Just being able to be a sharpshooter like he is.
Well, I don't know if you purposely teed that up for me, because this game, the Warriors versus the Sharks, don't give me a wink.
Gotcha, brother. Wink We're vibing, brother.
All right, so the Warriors, the Sharkies travel over to New Zealand to play the Warriors, and I say that last 10 minutes was one of the most entertaining footy we've seen this year. The Warriors, they did lose this one 10 points to 8, but in the last few minutes, it was 8 all. The Warriors are set to, they're about 30 metres out, oh no, sorry, only 15, 20 metres out, set for a field goal opportunity to take the lead. Will Kennedy, the Sharks fullback, runs, sprints, charged down the kicker. Not only did he charge it down, it landed in his lap, so he kept the ball. That same set, they go down the other end, and then the halfback, Braden Trindle, he kicks the field goal 40 plus meters out, a 2-point field goal to win the game. And then they still get the opportunity. So there's about a minute on the clock left, just over a minute or a minute. The Warriors, they kick off, they get the ball back. Now they play the set out. Warriors get a penalty because a player gets hit off the ball. Adam Poppe, the Warriors player, has the opportunity to tie the game. And you said the quality or the value that Jermaine Isako gives the Dolphins. Unfortunately, Adam Pompe misses the kick. Warriors lose, and the Sharkies hold on to their victory.
Do you know what else was miraculous about that part of the game? I can't believe that Will Kennedy's charged it down and hasn't touched the part of the kicker to give a penalty away.
Yeah.
You know, like when you
not
see...
Not even a shoelace.
Nothing, because there's been some soft penalties that come from that charge down, and to see him do that, and then, like, I'm waiting, oh, there's got to be a penalty somewhere, but nothing.
Well, Chanel Harris-Tavita, he kicks the ball, and then as Will gathers it, he turns around, like, with the most confused face, and he's like, what the hell just
what
happened
What just happened
there?
Here? Yeah.
No one touched me. This guy's got the ball, and now I have to run back and defend. But, look, the Sharkies get the job done. They win by 2 points and beat the Warriors in New Zealand.
Anyway.
But in another game, the Eels, they break a 3-game losing streak. They are beating the Canberra Raiders 15 points to 12. Isaiah Yongi, he was the star of the evening. Two try assists. He had 25 carries. And in the last game, in the last game for the round, but it was also one of the last games played for a while on Leichhardt Oval. Leichhardt Oval has been the home of the West Tigers for how long now?
It's the eighth wonder of the world, they call it, so I'm assuming since day dot.
All Tigers fans love Leichhardt Oval, and it's going under renovation?
Yeah, I think two years of renos.
So This is the last game, and the Tigers played the Titans. Tigers winning this one 36 points to 28. What I loved about this game, though, their skipper, Jerome.
The response.
The Jerome Luai, the Samoan skipper. He scored three tries, and all in the second half, but his reaction after his last try, they sealed the win. He gets up, he gives the big silence, the shush to the crowd or to someone in the crowd, and then...
The commentary box or someone in the media.
And you could see some of the words that he was saying, and it was to... Did they ever play together?
I don't think they did.
Maybe Blues, they were in the camps
together. It could have been camps together, maybe.
But Luke Carrier, former NRL player, had some strong words towards Jerome Luai.
Prior to this game, sensational response.
Yeah, just stepping up as a leader. And the funny thing was, after this game, they were on another TV show, and Luke Carey had to ask Jerome Luai
a question. Oh, apologise first. Sorry, mate, sorry. look, all good. It was all done in good spirits at the end of it, but it was great to see Jerome Luai bounce back and get the Tigers back in the winning circles.
Well, that was NRL Round 15 semi. Now the big game. Game 2.
Talk to me, man.
Played in Melbourne. State of Origin. New South Wales go into this one 1-0. And Queensland, the pressure is on to save the series.
Firstly, what does New South Wales need to do to perform at a higher level? Yep. Especially with those changes. With Mark coming in, how do you inject him in the game? But I just want to know what changes need to be made towards New South Wales games to get them points and be competitive from the get-go.
I think one thing that could help them, now you look back at the game one, the errors from Brian To'o, Stephen Crichton, but more so where they were making those errors. They were making those errors coming out of yardage.
Yep.
Releasing a lot of that pressure, and then they're having to put pressure on themselves because Queensland's now attacking the try line. But I also think there's a part of it where you're not giving much help to those outside backs taking the tough carries. Now, why I say that is because when Queensland were kicking to Blues' left corner, Brian To'o's corner, he'd come make his way to the middle. And then what Stephen Crichton would do, he'd go to keep his shape down the short side, and the long side, winger in Tolu Kola and Katoni Staggs, they would come into the middle of the field to take those tougher carries. What that does is Queensland, like, oh, well, you don't have no shape. You aren't going to move the ball.
You throw a blanket on their attack, isn't it?
Let's just compress and get our baseball bats out and go
and bash them.
And with a forward pack like Queensland, like they are aggressive. When you look at Tom Flagler this week, they'll have Tino Fa'asau Maliawi, Ruben Cotter, those hard men.
Okay.
And if you're not making it hard for them visually and all they see is one outside back carrying, they're just going to tighten up, be physical. So I think one area where the Blues could improve is just expand the shape a little bit. What Queensland do really well, though, is they win the collision. And also they carry the ball with intent. But because they expand, they've got Cameron Munster, they've got Harry Grant, Kalen Ponga to be able to move the ball, Blues have to open up their defensive spaces. So... yeah.
Okay. Can they get it done? Who's winning this one?
You know when they say the Queensland spirit?
Yeah.
I think it's a real thing, eh?
It is a real thing.
It hurts to say.
They get Origin more than New South Wales.
But Queenslanders know how to play State of Origin footy. So
that desperation of making sure that...
they will go down swinging as well, being down 1-0.
Yeah, they want it to go 1-0.
Also, Harry Grant and Cam Munster's home field in Melbourne Storm. I'm still going to back the Blues, and I really hope Mark Nowinetawase gets some good moments here. Payne Huss, don't underestimate impact Payne Huss will have. Payne Huss will have. I'm going to say the Blues by 10.
Okay. I'm going for the Blues, but there's a part of me that wants it to Queensland to win, so it goes. I always like a game three, regardless of anything. I love game three because it just...
Yeah, but game three is in Queensland.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. All good, but it's going to be a blockbuster come Wednesday, and we will hear that on ABC Radio Australia, won't we, T?
Yes, you can hear every NRL game and State of Origin live on ABC Radio Australia.
Bulavanaka, it's Mark, Hermano, Dukotoko, Nawangani Tuase from the Sydney Roosters, and you're listening to Asian Cricket.
And there it
there
is.
There he is.
Thank you, Phil, the producer, for providing us with the goods. Mark, Nawangani Tuase.
Yes, perfect. He'll be looking good in Wallaby Gold or maybe in a Fiji, flying Fiji in his jersey come World Cup next year. We don't know.
Or the Cavite.
What, the Silk Tails?
No, sorry. The Fijian Butty.
Fiji Butty could be there as well. Yeah, we never know.
This year.
It's keeping us guessing, old Marky. But anyway, it's...
I thought he was your friend.
We are friends, but sometimes friends don't tell you everything. Do you tell your friends everything? You tell me a lot of things.
Depends what kind of friend.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, let's go to rugby union. Wasted time there on that one. But hey, look, the semi-finals, cracking games there for Super Rugby Pacific. And we'll start with the Crusaders versus the Chiefs. Chiefs put an absolute clinic on, dominating the Crusaders 49 points to 12. Bulk of the points came in the first half. In fact, it was 42 points in the first half by the Chiefs. And I knew there was going to be some feeling in this game because the Chiefs had much success against the Crusaders in recent years when it comes to finals footy. If we go last year's grand final, Crusaders won 16 points to 12. In 2023, the Crusaders won 25 points to 20. In 2022, Crusaders beat the Chiefs 20 points to 7 in their semi-finals. So the Chiefs, they've been hurting for a very long time when they've come up against the Crusaders, and they came out the blocks fast. And what I love about the Chiefs is the fact that they've got a really good balance within their team. Forward set a really good platform. You've got Sami Penifinau, Tupo Vai, Samsoni Taukiaho. So very physical but skillful. But they're just their 10-12-13 combination. Damian McKenzie, Quinn Tupaia, and Lalakai Forgetti, who I will talk about in a second. But they've just got a really good balance on how they want to play.
I feel like McKenzie's been playing for so many years, eh?
He's been around, eh?
Is he still playing with the same style?
Same smile on his face when he kicks a goal.
I like that. Just jumping everywhere, yep, and involved in every play.
Yep.
Got that bit of leg speed as well, that spark about
it. And I think that's what the beautiful thing about these two teams with the Hurricanes and the Chiefs coming into semi-final football, they've got two tens that love to play with ball in hand. So they're not kicking too much possession away for the sake of just kicking it because you're in the certain part of the field. If they see an opportunity coming out of their end zone, they're seeing it, and you better be ready. And the players are all ready to just be able to strike on opportunities whenever they present themselves. So I really love the fact that it's two very, very good attacking teams going into the grand final, but also very good defensive team because they didn't concede too much. To hold the Crusaders to 12 points, that's an unbelievable effort. In a finals match with their strike power, that's an unbelievable stat to have.
How did the seven go for Christchurch?
Well, probably they shut him down. He wasn't as influential as probably the other games. They just had no answers just because of the Chiefs were just on top for so long. And I just felt like their forward pack went after the throat of the Crusaders forward pack, so he didn't have that same impact.
I'm waiting for you to say his name because I...
Lester Whanganuku.
There it is.
Lester, big Lester.
All the listeners going, yeah. He's the number seven.
That's nah, Lester, Lester. But one of the players I do want to highlight is Lalakai Forgetti. You know, he had 7 years with the Waratahs, 8 Wallaby caps. Mate, he's a genuine all-round great bloke, quite achiever. Just goes about his business without any carry-on. And I reckon he was undervalued, probably underappreciated while he was here in Australia. So I just thought for someone like him who's been around for a long time at the age of 31, probably had an opportunity to go overseas but decided to go to the Chiefs, it wouldn't have been for a lot of money. So it was more of an opportunity, and I think it's done him the world of good, not only as a footballer, but just someone connecting to probably his cultural roots, you know, Tongan Kiwi heritage. And he's just having fun playing out there in the 13 jersey. And
this might be a silly question. Is he All Black?
He's actually eligible. He's played for the Wallabies.
He's not All Black yet.
No, no, he could be, but he's just signed at Ospreys though, so I don't know if Dave Rennie will pick him.
Ospreys?
Over in Wales. So he's signed over there after the Super Rugby season. But you know, his success in a Kiwi team playing finals footy, he joins a long list of players that have had success from Australian environments, gone over to New Zealand and played finals footy. If you look at the Crusaders in recent years, you've had Pete Samu, you've had Mike Ala'ala'toa, you've had Nemanja Nondolo-Kurundrani, you've had James O'Connor, and then now you've got Lalakai Fulketi. There's obviously something that's not clicking for these players why they're playing in Australian environments compared to when they go over to New Zealand. Because it's not like they're not talented anymore, but whatever they're doing in the environments over in New Zealand, it's just unlocking their true potential. So I hope Lalakai gets a grand final before he leaves. He deserves it.
Don't know if that was a, what's the word, credit to New Zealand or stab at Australia again.
A bit of both. And then in the other game, the Hurricanes, they got over the Blues. Again, another high-scoring one, 57 points to 21. They got tested a little bit, but over the 80 minutes, they were just far too good. And probably the difference, it's very similar in terms of very well-balanced side, but probably the key difference for the Hurricanes, where they might get their edge, is they just hunt for opportunities even more so than the Chiefs. Like, if I think of some of the quick thinking that the Hurricanes have had this year to get points, it's only those type of players that can think of it, because Cam Røygaard, he jumped up to contest the ball. Beauden Barrett took his legs out in the air, drops to the ground, got a penalty. While everyone was around him, checking if he was okay, slowly gets to his feet, quick tap.
Takes off.
A couple of phases later, they score in the corner. Like, it's those moments like that where you think, wow, that is so smart to just think, I'm having a crack here in this situation.
Would you say that they would chance their arm a bit more, or they're just willing to play quicker and take on, you know, if there is a 3v2, take those short side opportunities, whereas some teams think it's a bit of a high risk, you know, we'll play the safe game?
I think they've got the license to just go and play footy.
Go have a crack.
Yeah. And that just unlocks everyone's mind to not play with fear. And they're just out there playing footy. And that's why I think the first Super Rugby team in history to score 100 tries in a season.
Like, that's this season.
This season, they've scored 100 tries in total. True. So like in 15 games, that's you do the math, but I can't do the math on that one. Average tries per game, something.
We'll do it after.
Sure. But man, looking forward to the grand final for this week. It will be in Wellington. Two heavyweights going at it. Can't wait for it.
Who wins? Oh, actually, save it for Friday.
We'll do
a bit of a review. Yeah, done. A preview then.
Done. And dusted tea. That is rugby union done.
Let's get over to our good friend, Shelley Long.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
It's time to say hello and get there to our PNG correspondent, rugby league superstar Shelley Long. Shelley, how you been? How's the weekend?
It was good. I played my first game back in BMD, so really excited to be back playing some representative footy, especially ahead of the World Cup at the end of the year.
Oh, good. How's the knee pulling up?
The knee pulled up really well. It was actually surprisingly better than I was expecting. Managed to get through the whole game. Calf cramped towards the last 5 minutes of the game.
The pickle juice come out.
Yeah, 100%, and I was like, oh, never again. First time that's ever happened to me. So, it's been great to be back out there and in the team environment as well.
For all our new listeners, Shelley had an ACL injury last year and went through the rehab, so we've been a part of that journey, and it's cool to see you back playing some rep footy, Shelley, and I'm hopefully
longer than expected rehab, but you know, stayed resilient, stayed in the fight, and
let's get you ready for this World Cup.
Absolutely ready to go for the PNG Orchids. But before we get there, we're going to talk Super W. We've got the Fijian Drua. What a game!
Yeah, it was a crazy game. The Fijian Drua, they ended up winning 29 points to 24 against the Western Force. It was a tough game, though, for them. They were originally down 24 points to 10 at halftime, and the Drua have come back in that second half. It was a very tough game for them, and I think they did really well, particularly in that middle part of the field. But it was fly half Varangi Sese for the Drua that really made a difference to them. It was two tries, I believe, that she scored by herself in that game that really pushed them ahead in the second half.
You called this game, eh, Sammy?
The drawer, yeah, because I said that the force were my smoky for this one because I said that the drawer were very good.
Oh, so you didn't get the point.
No, I didn't get the point. But I just knew that they were going to be tough to beat over there, and I was like, oh, it's come true. But, man, some of the footy that the drawer women played, like you talked about Litiana Vuetti coming off the bench, number 22, like she puts that grubber in behind for herself to regather, then gets it back on the inside to Varani Sese. Like she was immense off the bench, wasn't she?
Yeah, 100%. And I think you look at how they started, it wasn't great, but towards the back end of the game, it almost was like they were able to pull some things together and really ice those moments. But I think the best thing about it was a home game, it was a home win, and the crowd was on fire as always for the girls over there.
They went off on some of those tries when they panned to the crowd. Also saw Nai Hummel's try off the line out. She steamed through this gap and went through and scored. So Fijian Drua sort of played like, I reckon, the New South Wales Blues in that first one in terms of their error rate. But once if they can get rid of some of their errors, they're going to be so hard to stop. But that's one win, one loss for the Drua women. So hopefully in this sprint of a season, they find their form towards that back end. So they'll come home with a wet sail on that one. But speaking of Origin, T, we and I have spoken a little bit about, or at length about, the Origin on Wednesday. What's your thoughts here around how Queensland is shaping up?
Well, they've got some new additions in this week. I think it'll be an interesting one for them. But I think, I think it'll be a great game. The Maroons have a lot to play for in this game, particularly after their loss. So I think they'll be going in there feeling a little bit of confidence. It's always good to play in that even level playing field too in Melbourne.
Plenty of Pacific representation here in both teams. What I do love here on the Queensland side is Kulikefu Fenefe'uyaki making his Queensland debut. Hoping he really plays well and comes off the bench and makes an impact. But being a Blues man, it's a bit of...
You're hoping he doesn't?
Hoping he doesn't. Sorry, bro.
Beauty. Okay, so what final prediction? What's the score on Wednesday night?
Final prediction, I am going to say... I'm going to say 20-16. I feel like in favour of the Blues. Payne Haas is back.
Sorry, what did you say?
That blue shirt she was wearing the other week. I've never seen Queenslanders jump conceded the fence so fast. Thank you, Shelley Long.
Let's wrap it up there then.
We will see you next Monday on Knees and Footy, up the Blues.
Thanks, Shelley. Thank you.
I reckon you're the first Queenslander that I've
ever
seen.
Jump ship, yeah.
Like, usually it's the Blues. Like, all my mates, I got a few mates here in New
Even
South
I
Wales.
Even I said I'd want to go for a drawn series, but anyway.
And they, first time for everything.
There we go.
Great work, Shelley.
Well, guys, actually, I don't know if you know this, but I actually grew up as a Blues fan for the men's. So,
Never thought about like that. So you go Queensland women's.
I wonder if you said the same thing if it was men's. Queensland got up 1-0, but because Blues are, and then it's like, I grew up in New South Wales.
All good, Shelley. Take care. Always good to check in, and we'll chat next Monday.
See you guys.
All right, see ya. All right, T, we have a big guest on today for Knees and Footy, and someone that's had a wealth of experience in the NRL. He's played for the Panthers, the Broncos, Manly, Cowboys. He's an OG PNG Kumul as well. I guess the most impressive thing I've seen from this man on his Instagram is the head chef of whatever he's got going there. The food looks good, and I can't wait to ask him about some of his favourite dishes, especially his PNG dishes. But without further ado, it is the man, James Seguiaro. Welcome, Russ. Hello, Geta.
Good morning, boys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
PNG, born and raised. Whereabouts is your province over in PNG?
Eastern Highlands. I'm Eastern Highlands in East New Britain. My mum's from East New Britain, Machu Pit Island. It's back in 1992 or 93. I think the volcano erupted in Machu Pit Island, and that's when they had to evacuate East New Britain. And my dad's side is a proud man from Benna, which is in Goroka, Eastern Highlands. That's the central part in Goroka where you go up to the Hagen and Angar and all the parts in Eastern Highlands. So I was born in Goroka Base Hospital. So very proud of being from Eastern Highlands. Both as well as being from Eastern New Britain. It's a good mixture from the mountains to the ocean.
And what age did you move to Australia?
I was about 5 years old when I moved to Australia. Bit of a crazy story. My dad had plans for us to grow up in Australia, in Papua New Guinea, but he got held up in a bank to rascals, so they call over in PNG, but two gunmen came in and held him up, and it was sort of like a life or death situation, and they had a bit of a tussle, and my dad ended up disarming one of the robbers, and then the rest of the people helped in the bank. And from that point on, he just thought to himself, you know, my kids can't grow up in this type of environment. So he made the decision to move us over to Cairns when we were about 5 or 6 years old. And we bought a place. He bought us a place, and we built. And from there, I sort of grew up in Cairns. So for me, it was very tough, man. As for you guys, you know, like, I grew up in Papua New Guinea, so when I first moved over to Cairns, I didn't know English. Like, that was the biggest barrier for me, because not only you're taken away from your environment, you just don't know the language as well. So I was speaking a lot of broken English, and just had to learn. And obviously, we weren't allowed to speak English at home. I mean, we weren't allowed to speak pidgin at home for us to learn. Mm. So my dad moved my mum and now my siblings over, and we had to assimilate to Australian culture and stuff like that. So a lot of tough times. You know, my dad lived in Papua New Guinea and didn't come over. But, you know, those are the moments you remember when you grow up, and those are the moments that you sort of, for me, inspired me to, I suppose, try and be successful, whether it was in sports, business, or in everyday life. So man, it's good lessons.
What a crazy story.
That's insane. Your dad holding up,
being held up there.
That being the decision why you moved to Australia. And yeah, when you look back, and we'll get through, we'll talk about your journey when you first moved over. But, you know, when you look at your dad's decision, how proud of you, of your father, for making that sacrifice and making that decision to move the family to Australia away from, you know, that lifestyle.
Yeah, look, back in 2014, obviously, back in 2014 was one of my best years playing rugby league for Penrith Panthers, but it was also one of my worst years in terms of worse than good, because I lost my father that time. And for a long period of time, when we moved over from Australia, back when we first moved over, within the first 2 years, my dad ended up being bankrupt. So he moved us over, and the business started losing money. So then for a year, I didn't go to school. It broke out. So a lot of that time from my childhood up to, I suppose, 2014, up to actually 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I had a lot of resentment against my father. Mm. Because initially I didn't understand his decisions, like you just said, T, like, you know, my dad making that decision to move us over. When you're a child, you care about yourself a lot, like, and an athlete as well. It's all really, really selfish, but it's for the greater good. You don't realize until, obviously, you have kids or something happens in your life, a loss of someone, until you hit sort of your rock bottom and you start to self-evaluate every decision in your life. Mm. So I didn't really appreciate my father when he was around, and it really killed me when he passed away, because I had a lot of regret and resentment and all them emotions that you feel, and when they pass, you are allowed, but you don't understand how to release it and how to say sorry and forgiveness and all the beautiful things of you going through the process to get, then gather that peaceful part of it about yourself and your heart. So the understanding decision now, when I'm a bit old and going through a bit, and then being able to say, you know, my dad made decision strictly because for us kids. And now I understand it a lot more than I did when I was younger and going through. A lot of the times, even when I played in my professional career, I was holding on to a lot of things that I didn't realize. And yes, footy was a vehicle for me to release that, but it didn't make me face them issues until it sort of stopped. Rugby league stopped. And then you're like, oh my God, like, these issues start popping up in your life.
Mm.
Because we're so, you know, we're going to do this. Yeah, we're going to go training this time. We're going to, do this. And then when it all stops, then it's when you start to unravel the real person. Who am I? why do I do this? What is my purpose now that this thing that I've known since I was 8 years old is taken away from me? It's a beautiful experience. So if you go the right way and if you talk to the right people, work on yourself, read different books, et cetera, however you overcome that bit to then understand me. And my dad done this because he was in this situation. I love him. You come out of it, for me anyway, you just like love your parents so much more for making them decisions that you yourself have come away with it, being the one that's, you know, been successful initially with the decision just from that.
Man, that's sitting, honestly, when we jumped on here to have a chat, I did not expect to have a conversation like this. You know, it's incredible, bro. I appreciate you sharing some of those moments. But before we get to some of your rugby league moments, you know, what was that like with mum then? You obviously spoke a lot about dad, but you know, what was it like with mum and the communications and the emotions with her?
Yeah, look, my mum, you know, I probably get emotional talking about this because my mum had to look after like six kids, right? So my mum was a heavy seventh-day Adventist. She got married to my dad when she was 19. So straight out of school, all she knew was the Lord. And then, you know, a couple of years after she got pregnant with my siblings, my dad asked her to move over to Australia. Again, she wasn't the best at speaking English by herself with six kids to a different country, different surroundings. I held a lot of things against my mum as well. Exact same as my dad. And, you know, she was the backbone of, you know, us growing up and us being able to assimilate to Australian culture and trying to give us what she did and never had, which was an opportunity for a better life. And at the time, us as kids, you know, six of us, and her trying to find her way in and where she fits in, because my dad was back and forth, and as soon as the business was bankrupt, he was never around. So she had to be the mum, dad, everything. And the way I see my mum growing up, it was just like, man, my mum smacks me all the time and blah, blah. Like, you know, she was just, because she had to, in order for me to be the person and, you know, me to persevere through being homesick. When I'm talking about coming down to Sydney as a kid from Cairns, I had to have that toughness. I had to have that discipline and that mental edge. Otherwise,
the tough love.
Tough love in a way, T. For a long period of time, I didn't understand that because all I wanted was love. But then my wife made me realize that it's forgiveness that's going to set us free. It's all them things that we held against our parents that, why didn't I get this or why we didn't treat me like that? No. Well, I got to understand, my mum had six kids, man. Every day that I get the opportunity to, I say, hey, I love you, mum, as much as I can, because for 30-something years, man, T and Sam, I wasn't able to say that to my mum, and I'd have phone calls with her, and half the time I'd just be upset at her, and I didn't realise that it was just my resentment holding me back from being able to feel the whole entirety of what love can provide you. You know, it can provide you so much more clarity in life, and every moment I get, I just want to say to my mum, love you and thank you for always being there for me in terms of, you know, give me that discipline that I needed to persevere and be a professional athlete and achieve my dreams.
Yeah, it's always awesome when, and I think people don't understand the journey that rugby league players go through with being, you know, you mentioned earlier about being stuck in that bubble and locked in and zoned, and then it's not until that bubble pops or you retire, then you reflect back on your journey and you understand the reasons why you are shaped, the reasons why you are, that you are who you are. And then that also gives you the time to reflect on, you know, some of that journey with your parents and other moments throughout your life. And I love hearing, you know, appreciate you for sharing some of those moments about your mum and dad. And it's cool to see you now with this contentment and also this share for love and the understanding. But it all comes once that bubble has been, you know.
Being able to recognize those behaviors and habits, you don't understand at the start, but then you get the time to reflect and then you come out of the furnace a better person for it.
Very much so. That's what's beautiful thing about, I see, like, you know, beautiful thing about rugby league, man. Like, I spent 2 years up at Cairns teaching in an Indigenous school. And the good thing about rugby league, it gives you see the physical side of it. You can go away and practice a skill and then come back and you can see the physical part of it. But when I stopped playing, I was like, oh, I do love rugby. I do love footy. But you don't, until you understand the beautiful part of just the rawness of the kids' emotions when they play it. And for a period when I was teaching, I used to ref, like touch, you know, touch at lunchtime. And I fell back in love with the game because the purity of someone's, a kid's emotion, either with if they're running away for a runaway try or throwing a two-man cutout. The excitement and the emotion on the face, I then realized that's the way I started playing the sports, because you were smiling ear to ear, and that's I see myself in you so much. So I see my that six-year-old kid that just wanted to run around until the sun came down, and that ignited the emotion in me. Like, yeah, that's why I'm going to play the sport, not because I want to get better at it, or not because I want I want this kid, or if I'm going to be coaching to become the next, you know, Nathan Cleary. It's purely because of the enjoyment of what you get. And I can see that from the facial expression. That's why rugby league starts, like, for me, it's another vehicle, especially from up north and the Pacific. It's in a vehicle for us to drive that enjoyment. And then obviously from the enjoyment and the purity of that comes lessons that we can all take away through life. But it's the people that take the lesson and deliver it, whether it is coaches or teachers, you know, provide the environment for kids to then, okay, within this board, I can get this discipline or that discipline.
You got me and Sammy smiling.
But it
is. It's because we're both coaching. I think we're very aligned with your process or your thoughts towards the love of the game and the expectations some of these kids have put them on themselves. Yeah, when they watch the game of rugby league, it just takes away the joy, and which led me to my question to you about rugby league. You know, how much did rugby league play a role in your life first moving over from PNG to Cairns, and then as it got to a professional level?
Oh, mate, huge. My dad, I'm the first ever second generation Kumul. So my dad played for the Kumuls, and then I played, and then Lockie Lamb.
Yeah.
We're both two of the first ever second generation Kumuls. So ever since I was like playing for the Kumuls in Papua New Guinea, I think when you guys go over, you understand, like, it is such an honor. I remember when I made my debut for the Kumuls, when I first put on the jumper, was the Prime Minister's 13 in Lae back in 2011. In the stadium at Lae, you have to get ready at the hotel first, because there's no dressing sheds, right?
Yeah.
And the night before, we were having just about to go in for dinner and everything, and we were still sort of standing where we were at the hotel. You could see the stadium up on the hill. We were standing up on the hotel, and we looked over to the stadium, and there was already people there. And then a couple of the local boys going, yeah, these people have started walking. These people from the islands will walk a day and a bit just to come to the game. And then overnight, you can hear the crowd down at the stadium because we weren't too far away. And then I was just like, the build-up of it, and then we got ready, you know, put on our kit, strapping everything, jumped in the bus, boots, ready to just go out in the field and do a little warm-up. So we're going on the bus, and I'm in the back of the PMV bus, one of them PMV buses, and we go on this dirt road just about 100 metres up, leading up to the stadium. And then this kid's running, trying to chase the bus. And there was this one kid had like one shoe on. It was just one shoe on, and the other side of his feet was no shoes. And he was running behind the bus, and he was sort of reaching out. And I looked at him, and from that moment, I see the exact same thing when I was I'm teaching these kids. I see myself in that kid, and it's like, this is what it means to be a Kumul. You're representing not only, you know, myself, but my name, but you're representing 8 million people from 800 different dialects. We are so diverse in that sense, that, but this is who I'm representing. This jersey doesn't mean just another jersey. It's my freaking skin. Is that something I'm going to bleed for? And I started crying. And that's when it came to me. I understood the opportunity I had. So from that period, like from being a Cornwall to then representing my family in the NRL arena, and a way for me to escape what was happening emotionally with my mum and my parents, and then all them types of, it was a vehicle to drive me to want more, but then understand that the opportunity that it creates, I can be this person, that person. And rugby league gets you in rooms and meets new people, all different types of people. But the beautiful part, it's the people that you meet, like just around the community clubs. There's people that put in their time, whether they're coaches or the ladies that cook the chips are there from 7 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. The people that they just love you and they don't want anything in return. They just want you to be fed and go out there and have your Gatorade and then play again after you've played your game. You know, the junior clubs, that's the ones that the grassroots footy, they're the ones that really are the backbone, and they are the part where made me be successful than people that you meet leading up to, you know, NRL, and then it becomes a different type of environment, different beast. But I'm so passionate about the sport in general, from the grassroots up to the league, and I'm up to the NRL and professional level. So
you said that so beautifully, hey?
Yeah.
it's unbelievable just sitting here listening to the passion that you speak with, you know, and what it means to absolutely love it. Like I just feel blessed being in your presence right now to be able to hear you talk about this. So it's unreal. And when I think about with the PNG Chiefs coming in, obviously that's not going to be made up of all Papua New Guineans, but with your lived experience and understanding what it means to you to represent your people and your family, what would your advice be to, say, like a Connor Watson or Jerome Luai and others who are going to come over and understand, hey, this is bigger than footy? Like, what would your advice be to them?
I think more so they've been over and they've seen, like, and obviously Chalmers and the PNG Chiefs have done well in terms of bringing them over and understanding what rugby league means to the whole of Papua New Guinea. But I can only see nothing but positives. And yes, like, out of the whole thing, there's going to be good and bad, but it's always going to be more positive. It's going to create pathways, not only for people and kids in Papua New Guinea, but the Pacific, and whether it be Solomon Islands, whether it be Fiji, whether it be Samoa, whether it be Tonga, whether it be, you know, New Caledonia or wherever. It's only going to uplift the Pacific, and you're going to see the beautiful part of it, because we're going to need the community people, the grassroots people around the clubs to then have the PNG be successful. Connor Watson and Jerome Luai, they're professionals, and they are going over for the right reasons, I believe. And they know, you know, they're going to put their own mark on it, on the jersey. So whoever comes over, and I think they're only going to immerse themselves in the culture, because when you go over to Papua New Guinea, you can't escape the culture. It's 800, like I said before, 800 different dialects. You're walking down the street, someone's speaking 3, 4, 5 different languages. You're walking down the street, or the culture with people giving you food after food, and then, you know, you're taking a flight over to the Highlands, and you just got Enga, Bena, Mendi, all these different cultures in one. So you can't escape it, but it's my probably advice is just immerse yourself. You're only going to get positives out of it.
Yes, dive straight in, immerse yourself.
Don't dip your toe in the water like we like.
Don't dip your toe in, just jump in head first.
No lukewarm.
I think they're going to do that, and Chalmers have done a great job. The more of the boys that come over are the better, but there's, don't worry, we've got some dogs in PNG, and it's going to create
no doubt about that too.
Can't wait for it. Hey, last question from me, and man, I honestly think we could have just spent the whole show
absolutely
talking to you, and I reckon there will be a part two, because
there's
plenty more to chat about. But last question from me, when you look over your rugby league career and the journey you've had, what's the biggest lesson you've been able to take away from your journey in rugby league?
Wow, that's a very good question, T. There's been so many, man. Like, it's been so many. But I think the jersey you put on, the jersey you have, it's not yours. Understanding that, I never understood it when I was playing, because I was so self-involved and thinking, oh, that's going to be my jersey. But that jersey you have for that period, it goes like that. It's never yours. So every opportunity, you know, you get with it, you've got to appreciate it. soak it up, soak every little juice of it up. And it is the best experience, but like just being the best advocate for the jersey and wearing it with pride every game, every training session, you know, because I don't feel as grateful as I was now that I am for it.
That's
when I was playing.
That's great advice. Honestly. That is very
it's
good
something
advice.
That you probably don't realize till you've finished playing. You're like, yeah, that is right. That's correct. That jersey was never mine.
Exactly. And it goes really fast, that career. But one last one for me. I better get in the food question here. I did say, head chef. Oh, I enjoy watching your Instagram and you cooking feeds and stuff. What's your favorite PNG dish? To cook.
Oh, my favorite PNG dish. I wouldn't do it justice. Like, I don't cook it like my mom, but it's Aigir. It's from where my mom comes from in East New Britain, Rabaul. So it's Aigir.
What's that?
That'd be my favorite. It's like they cook it with like river stones. They heat up the stones. It's like pretty much like, you know, a hangi or whatever.
Oh, but okay. Yeah, nice.
Chicken and ibica and pumpkin tips with sweet potato and banana. Cooked banana, all in, you know, coconut cream, and it's cooked over like a couple of hours, probably about 1 or 2 hours slowly.
Nah,
so it's like the PNG hangi or umu.
Yeah, umu. Yeah, mumu. That's in the islands, but in the highlands where my dad comes from, they call it mumu. Ah. But different, they cook it with different sort of veggies and stuff.
Yeah.
Where my mom comes from, they call aigir. There's different forms of it. Yeah, everyone in Papua New Guinea goes mad for East New Britain cuisine.
Ah, there we have it. Well, brother, honestly, it has been a very uplifting, heartwarming conversation with you. I really appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing your amazing journey and how you've come out the other side and just want to give back and ooze passion and just... Yeah, absolutely loved it, bro. So thank you so much for jumping on with us.
Thank you, T. Thank you, Sam. Cheers for having me, man.
Appreciate you, brother.
Give me three answers for this one.
I still giggle that them people singing is Jake and Michael and Emily.
I was wondering what you were doing over there in the corner. I was like, what's this guy thinking heavily around these questions for... Give me three.
No, just caught worried. My eye. I was like, who sings that? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's the Nija Daily crew. So thank
Shout
you
out
again.
To the Nija Daily crew.
But this is our game of Give Me Three, where we wrap up our show with a bit of competitiveness between me and Sammy. And Sammy, just a quick reminder, they've been fun.
They've
the
been
last
fun.
Week,
now you'll like this one.
And we've been getting the answers. That's why
we're why on 22. It's good. That's why you're getting the jersey and a feed at the moment. That's 20, why.
22-19.
I need you to give me three. Tongan try scorers from last week.
But
I need at least one of them to come from Super W or Super Rugby.
Oh.
So in like out of the codes, out of rugby league and rugby union, I just need three Tongan try scorers, but you need at least one for
Tongan. So they've got
Tongan.
To be Tongan.
They have to be Tongan from the round. So all the footy that was played in the Super Rugby Pacific semi-final, in the Super W round game, and in the NRL. So there's like 7,000 games to choose from, and there were 8 Tongan try scorers in total.
Oh, you've done your studies.
Yes. And in the NRL, there was 1, 2, 3, 4.
Isaiah Katoa.
Yes, there's one. Show and go scores. There's one.
And we're going over to Rugby Union. Oh, what's his name? Daniel.
Daniela is incorrect.
Daniela Tupou. Daniel Tupou.
No.
What was his name though?
Kyron Tomofilau.
Kyron.
Yeah. Kyron. I thought you would have got more of the NRL players. That's why I said, think forwards. Man, any more clues? I'm giving it to you.
Kieran Kolomatangi.
That is incorrect.
Did he not score?
Nah. It was David Fifita.
Oh, was David Fifita.
David Fifita scored. The other one was Divita Naofahu from the Dolphins. He scored as well.
Naofahu
scored. And then from the Chiefs, Tupou Va'i, Samsoni Taukioho, and Alana Sikimeti for the Western Force.
Yeah, there was no chance.
There you go. But that is our time up. So make sure you tell your footy-loving friends about Nijan footy. Find it wherever you get your podcast or on the ABC Pacific website.
See you on Wednesday, Friday,
Saturday.
Up the Blues.
Saturday, yeah, whatever.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.